Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Lincoln, the pro-worker president. What he said about labor and capital. And today on the show, the electrical workers organizing in Oregon. And labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein on the big changes at the National Labor Relations Board. Good afternoon and welcome to the Friday, February 12th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. You should know that by now. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. We have three guests on the show today. Two of them are conferenced in our first two segments. Tony Ruiz is with IBEW 89, which is based in Oregon, and it's quite a territory. They have about 1,000 members. They cover the entire state and parts of Washington, Idaho, and Northern California. That's a pretty good territory. And he's a 22-year union member, serves as an organizer and business rep for Local 89. Joining Tony is Logan Gillis. Logan has worked as a legislative aide since 2009, and previously he served as a shop steward for the food and commercial workers, Local 555 out in Oregon. In the legislature, he worked to pass worker-friendly policies, including Oregon's law that requires public employees remain neutral in union organizing drives. That's a subject we're going to touch on later in the show. He was also involved in the Worker Freedom Act that prohibits employers from requiring workers to attend captive audience anti-union meetings, which the big corporations are so good at. Boy, you want to start a union in your workplace? Get ready for a captive audience meeting. I can tell you that right now. The subject matter is organizing legislative staff. I have to tell you that Local 89 of the electrical workers has a history of being bipartisan, and they work throughout the political spectrum. They have a reputation of working with employers. They have a good relationship with employers, not an adversarial one. And they're primarily focused on field of telecom, logistics, administration, clerical, manufacturing, construction, campaign work, and medical care. Now, the campaign work is interesting, and the staffing is interesting. What they've been doing, and they've been very successful at this, they're organizing the staffers at various representatives' offices. Like, for instance, if I want to contact my congressman, all right, Congressman Joe Smith, I'm just going to use that as an example. I'm not going to get a hold of Joe. I'm going to get a hold of a person that works with Joe. That's the person that they're organizing, because these people are very, very important when you want to get things done. They work very long hours. They're stretched to the max. They need a union. That's where IBEW 89 comes in. So we're going to hear from Tony. He's doing the organizing, and Logan has worked in the legislative area, so they got a nice partnership going. So we'll talk about that. We'll also touch on the emergency temporary standard for workplace safety. Oregon was among the states that passed this standard for workplace safety during the pandemic. Why? Because when Trump was in office, he didn't do anything on the national level. So it's a good area for organizing, state of Oregon. Second guest is our labor attorney, and that would be Joyce Goldstein. And she's going to talk about the changes at the National Labor Relations Board. And I've referenced this on the show many, many times. The big change was the ouster of the general counsel, Peter Robb. And the last broadcast, or it might have been the one before that, she said, well, he probably will stay in office until August of this year, because that's when his term was supposed to end. Well, Biden didn't see it that way. Right off the bat, he fired him, which rattled the conservatives. They're saying, oh, wait a minute, he's supposed to be there till August. Well, anyway, he fired him, and he put a new guy in there by the name of Peter Orr. She's going to give us a little background on Mr. Orr and the neutrality case that was withdrawn. The new general counsel, that being Peter Orr, ended a case that the Trump administration has put in motion in hopes of curbing the union's use of neutrality agreements with employers. Now, it's real simple. A neutrality agreement is just that. If you are working in an office and you want to start a union, the company says, you know what? If you want to do it, go ahead. We're going to remain neutral. We're not for it. We're not against it. That's what neutral means. The right to workers don't like that at all. Uh-uh. No, they can't stand it. In fact, if you really want to get sick in a hurry, go to the Right to Work Defense Foundation, and they'll talk to you about, well, you can read about the neutrality agreement and how it affects workers. And they point out in this one line, the bottom line is this, employees' rights of free speech are sacrificed and lost under so-called neutrality agreements. Instead of being able to freely choose for themselves whether they desire union representation through a secret ballot election, management and union officials actually work together to impose unionization on workers from the top down. That's what the right to workers are saying. And looks like the new person in charge of the National Labor Relations Board is all about neutrality. Like I said, big changes, new sheriff in town. And Joyce is going to speak to that. Joyce is so good on these issues. She's been practicing labor law for well over 40 years, labor, employment law, employee benefits, and litigation. You can find her online at joycegoldsteinlaw.com, joycegoldsteinlaw.com. Today is February 12th. It is Lincoln's birthday. He was born on this date in 1809. So he'd be, what, 212 years old today? Lincoln is also known for being very pro-worker. And one of his famous quotes was, labor is superior, greatly superior of capital. Now, that's not the entire quote. I'll get to that in a minute. In essence, he said, we the workers made and make this country go. We as workers produce the goods. We provide the services. And yes, we create the profits which capital reaps. Well, some, indeed many of our present politicians seem to have forgotten that, if they ever knew it to begin with. They kowtow to the capitalists, who many politicians think produce the profits, and they ignore the workers. Now, some progressives would say, well, get rid of the corporate class and let the workers run the show. Now, you know that's not going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. But back to old Abe. He didn't go that far. Instead, he recognized capital plays a role, but only because of the larger and vital role of workers. Here's Lincoln's entire quote, and this is taken from his first annual message to Congress. The date was December 3rd, 1861. Listen to this. Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor, and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. Capital has its rights, which are as worthy as protection as any other rights. He was very careful in saying that. That's called elevating workers and throwing the corporate crooks a bone at the end. So on this day, Lincoln's birthday, we honor old Abe on the anniversary of his birth. Let's remember this from his address in 1861. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. Abraham Lincoln, 1861. Those are the words of one heck of a president of the United States of America. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce. When we come back, we're going to focus on IBEW Local 89 out of Oregon, what they're doing to organize legislative aides. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers, OFT-AFT.org is their website, part of the American Federation of Teachers. Let's go to our live line, and joining us, we have two individuals, their conference. Tony Ruiz is with IBEW Local 89 out of Oregon, and joining us on another line is Logan Gillis, and Logan is a legislative aide to State Senator Michael Dembrow, a position that he's had since 2009. But I'm going to let both gentlemen give me a little background on what they're doing, who they are, and all that good stuff. Tony, I'm going to start with you. First off, welcome to the show, America's Workforce. Talk to me about IBEW 89. Let's start there.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on. IBEW Local 89, we're based out of Marysville, Washington, actually, and we have a pretty large jurisdiction that covers the entire states of Washington, Oregon, Northern Idaho, and Northern California. We're a little bit of a unique local in that we don't necessarily represent the electrician construction worker. We started back as a telecom local representing what was GT at the time, and has now progressed into many different trades and workers that we represent. Our local represents folks ranging from, like I said, telecom workers to administrative staff, healthcare workers, and now recently campaign workers working on individual campaigns and legislative staff here in Oregon, which is the campaign we're currently working on now.
Good, good. And how many members in Local 89, Tony?
Local 89 has just over 1,000 members currently within primarily, Oregon and Washington is where the bulk of our membership resides.
Yeah, you got a big territory there. Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Northern California. Wow, that's a lot of ground.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Logan Gillis. Logan, I briefly talked about what you do. Give me some more details. Go ahead.
I've been working since 2009 as a legislative aide to State Senator Michael Dembrow. I'd be glad to sort of go into what that work entails, if that's what you're interested in.
Sure, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on and for having us on and kind of spotlighting this issue. I think it's pretty exciting to know that we could be the first legislative staff union in the country, and certainly hope that other folks would follow that lead. And I know that there are conversations ongoing in other states, which is wonderful. As a legislative aide, I think a lot of people, they think of Congress when they think about the work that we do, and I wish we had a staff of a dozen folks. But the reality on the ground is that here in Oregon, legislative staff are usually a staff of one person year-round. Mm-hmm. So each legislator has one staff person full-time, 12 months a year. We do have the ability to hire a second staff person when we're in legislative session. But here in Oregon, the legislature meets for about 6 months in an odd-numbered year and about 6 weeks in an even-numbered year. So most of the time, it's one staff. I like to refer to it when people ask what I do as chief cook and head bottle washer, if you will. So, you know, I mean, I do everything from, helping the senator with his policy agenda and moving bills through the process, all the way down to scheduling meetings, staffing constituent events, town halls, things of that nature. Helping constituents is a big part of the job. So oftentimes legislative aides are the first point of contact for folks who are having questions about it could be with the state government. They may have an issue that we will go ahead and refer them to their U.S. senator or representative. I will say during the pandemic, we've had a lot of interactions with constituents who are really in some dire economic circumstances, you know, helping connect people with unemployment benefits, trying to solve issues that they're having, getting access to the benefits that they've earned. A lot of folks who are needing assistance or direction to community resources, you know, we're seeing a lot of issues with food insecurity, housing insecurity, right? I mean, as you know, it's no surprise. We all see it. You know, the impact of this pandemic, you know, it's not just on the health of folks. We've got a lot of people out there who are struggling. And oftentimes, you know, they'll make a phone call or send an email to our offices, and we'll do our best, you know, to connect them to the resources that are available for them.
Yeah, yeah. This Michael Dembro that you work for, I can only assume he's very worker-friendly. I mean, you've been working with him since 2009. I'm just wondering what kind of initiatives you have put forward in the legislature there that are good ideas, progressive issues. Can you speak to some of those?
Certainly. And I actually, the first time I met Michael was at a Portland Jobs with Justice rally. And he has been involved for many years with the Portland chapter of Jobs with Justice. He was actually the president of the faculty union at Portland Community College for many years, and so he has been active actually as an AFT member, so shout out to OFT on that. So over the course of his time serving in the legislature, I've been able to work on a lot of worker-friendly policies over the years. Early on in his time, we worked on legislation that prohibits public employers in Oregon from getting involved in union organizing efforts. The law requires them to remain neutral if their workers are seeking to organize or having those conversations. We've passed legislation that prohibits employers from requiring workers to attend what we call captive audience anti-union meetings. So I think listeners of your show are probably familiar with the standard protocol when the boss gets word that someone might be talking union, all of a sudden a bunch of consultants show up and you're invited or compelled to attend a bunch of meetings where they talk about how Jimmy Hoffa wants to pick your pocket. And so we were able to pass a law saying that if people choose not to attend those meetings, that is their right. and you can't discipline them or retaliate against them on that. We were involved in the passing of raising the state's minimum wage several years ago, and some of the conversations that led to Oregon passing paid sick days legislation, which is a big deal for a number of unions. You know, there are certainly things that you can bargain in a contract, and then there are times when it's helpful to have a law that not only provides those type of benefits to union workers, but to all workers. And I will say the state AFL-CIO here in recent years has really been focused on policies that lift up all Oregon workers. Mm-hmm. And that's really been a great thing to see and be a part of. We are working right now on legislation that's going to expand apprenticeship requirements for public contracts. So, you know, when we're spending state dollars, we want to make sure that we're hiring contractors who have high labor standards and who are employing apprentices in those trades, because we know that if you're going to get through your apprenticeship program, you need to get your hours in and you need to be on a job site. And so, you know, that's just a handful of things for you.
Good. I like that. I like what I'm hearing. Very good stuff. Tony, I'm going to switch over to you because what I'm hearing, obviously you work with Logan, and it's a nice blend because he's got legislative experience, and obviously you are an organizer, you're a business rep for Local 89, and the whole idea here is to educate our political leaders so they can pass the policies that Logan just talked about. So, Tony, give me a little history on this. Did you just start this? How long it's been going on? And I'm just wondering what kind of success we've achieved if it's been going on for a while.
Sure. It actually, this campaign hasn't been going on for all that long of time when you consider how long other campaigns tend to drag out. We had another IBEW organizer, Ray Lister, who ran for public office not that long ago. And through that effort, he had contacts. He established contacts and friendships within the state legislature. Sorry, and that relationship somehow blossomed into this organizing opportunity where the friends that Ray had established in the legislature let him know that, hey, there's some folks here that could use some union representation. So friends of the IBEW introduced us. And we said, look, it sounds like you all have some issues at work that that could be resolved by organizing your workplace. That transpired, Logan, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think we started this kind of the end of summer, maybe July-ish. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so we started our efforts then. We filed a petition early October, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we are coming up on some deadlines here to where we should have an election happening pretty soon.
Very good. You know what, gentlemen, I got to take a quick break. I want to get into more detail on what you're doing. Sounds pretty revolutionary, and it's something I think a lot of unions are probably going to follow. Tony Ruiz, he's with IBEW Local 89 out on the West Coast, Oregon area. Pretty big territory there. Covers parts of Northern California, Idaho, and Washington State. And joining us is also Logan Gillis, who is a legislative aide to State Senator Michael Dembrow in Oregon. Later in the show, Joyce Goldstein, our noted labor attorney, will be joining us talking about the shakeup, which is a good shakeup, at the National Labor Relations Board. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Each year, one in four people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many will be serious. The majority of falls happen at home, so remove things that could make you trip and install handrails to keep you steady. To learn more about the steps you can take to help prevent a fall, please talk to your doctor. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency, celebrating 50 years, 216-666-2185. And you can find them online at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line, and we have conferenced two individuals, Tony Ruiz, who is with IBEW 89. Website is IBEW89.com out of the Oregon area. Big territory, too. Cover Northern California, part of Idaho and Washington State. And joining us also is Logan Gillis, who has worked since 2009 as an aide to State Senator Michael Dembrow. I want to salute you, gentlemen, because I read this recently about Oregon's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, better known as OSHA, new emergency temporary standard for workplace safety during the pandemic. And that went into effect, I want to say, several weeks back. And the big reason for this, and this is because of the previous administrations, OSHA just did not protect workers. So we've seen states do it on their own. Now, things are changing with the new administration, but it's good to see that you took the lead on that. And Tony, let me ask you real quick, is that something that's going to become permanent in the not too distant future? Is that the case?
Yeah. Yeah, my understanding is those will become permanent standing rules. I'm very excited about those rules getting passed. I wish I had more involved in that process, but I wasn't. But the fallout of it, though, is we've seen from our employers a more engaged process with our employees, with the members that we represent in establishing workplace rules and enforcing them. So it's a great effort.
Yeah, Tony, as you know, the people on the front lines, in this case, the IBEW, you know what needs to be done when it comes to safety protocol. And it's good to see that the state is finally moving forward and recognizing that. Let's get back to the subject here, because this is interesting. You're not what you call a real political organization. I understand there's no political action committee, but you're involved in politics, and you're doing it in a very unique way. You're organizing the staffers to the lawmakers, the people, the legislative aides. Let's talk about that. It's kind of like a backdoor approach to get the lawmakers to know what unions are all about. Can you explain how evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it pretty accurately. Local 89, we're apolitical. Local. We don't have a PAC. We do not contribute to any political campaigns, nor do we endorse candidates from our local. We are primarily focused on workers, representing workers, and those that are seeking representation. And that's our focus day in and day out. Our goal, or any organizer's goal, really, is to educate the workers that are seeking to be organized. That's what we do. And helping these folks get a voice in their workplace and have a say in their wages, hours, and working conditions is our primary focus. It's not to mm-hmm. implement or to influence policy change. It's just to represent workers.
Yeah, yeah. Now, how has the reaction been so far? I mean, obviously, this has been going on for a little time. I'm just wondering what you're hearing.
So from an employer and union representation perspective, it hasn't been too much out of the norm. There's been challenges to the status of certain employees, whether they're confidential, supervisory in nature. There were some unique challenges the state brought to this campaign regarding the constitutionality of this bargain unit, whether they were constitutionally able to be represented. But I think those challenges are going to be overcome here shortly, and we're going to work ourselves towards a successful election campaign. I don't know if Logan may have some more input at what he's hearing at his level, but from my level, that's what we've been seeing.
Logan, what are you hearing? I'd like to get your point of view on this.
I think it's important for folks to understand that this campaign really kicked off with Local 89, in the summer. But the concerns and the things that would motivate legislative aides to organize, people have been talking about those for years. So I think, 89 has really provided us with a facilitator for turning those concerns and issues that people have talked about for a long time into getting a voice in the workplace and being able to have a collective bargaining agreement and Weingarten rights and all those other things that come along with union membership. In the conversations, and I probably talked to dozens of my coworkers on both sides of the aisle in the last 3-4 months, and you hear a lot of the same concerns from folks. I mean, people do this work because they're passionate about the issues, because they're passionate about helping their fellow Oregonians get access to government and be able to have a voice and understand what goes on under the hood. And we've got staff who come from all walks of life. You know, some people are right out of college. Some people are on their second or third career. We've got folks who have young children. And it's a unique workplace. It's a unique set of workers. But the motivators to organize and come together and form a union, I think, are pretty familiar. You know, it's when decisions are being made by legislative leadership that impact us, we want to be able to have a voice on that. We want to make sure that the benefits, healthcare, pension, and other things that we have right now are protected and written down in black and white on a piece of paper. And, you know, I think it really is about having that stability, that sense of stability. As your listeners may know, Oregon is not a just cause state. So right now, legislative aid could be terminated with no notice for any reason. And I've seen fellow staffers in the middle of a workday carrying a box with their stuff out of the building. And as you can imagine, that has a bit of a chilling effect on some folks. You know, you want to know that you have some rights. You want to know that there's a disciplinary process that's in place that workers have input on and that the employer is going to have to abide by.
So in other words, it's an at-will state. Am I correct in saying that?
You got the terminology that I was searching for and didn't find.
There you go. Okay, that's what I'm here for, help you through these things. So it's good that you're moving the needle in the right direction here. Where do you see this? I got to salute you. You said that this started in the summer in the middle of a pandemic. To start anything in the middle of a pandemic, that takes a lot of chutzpah. So I got to hand it to you. And I would imagine, too, that pandemic has been kind of in the way in this campaign. Tony, maybe you could speak to that as far as moving forward on that. How has that? I don't know how serious COVID-19 is in Oregon, but maybe you could fill us in.
Well, it's as serious here as it is anywhere else, and we take it seriously. I can tell you that. To be honest, I think the pandemic has really brought about some tools that we weren't focusing on before. I mean, I think everybody and their mother knows about Zoom now, and that's really been a focus point on how we've been organizing with folks. We haven't been able to do your traditional, door knocking. So we go to Zoom, and actually find it a lot more efficient in our jobs as organizers. It does lack a little bit of that personal touch, being in somebody's home and really getting a feel for who they are and how they live. But as far as being able to work through people's schedules and getting everybody to collaborate on any aspect of the campaign, it's really been easier utilizing our digital tools available to us, and we may not have focused on those so much previous to the pandemic.
Tony or Logan, you could pick up on this. You have a date in mind when you'd like to see this wrapped up, or is just kind of fluid right now the way, and obviously the pandemic plays into that as well? Who wants to answer that?
Well, we'd like to see it wrapped up tomorrow, but that's definitely not going to be the case. We are anticipating there to be a hearing of sorts when it comes to supervisory status and a few other details of the campaign. And once that's hammered out, we'll have an election date set. In Oregon, all public employee campaigns are done via mail-in ballot. So we're looking to have things potentially wrapped up in the next 30 days.
Good. Well, I tell you, this is interesting what's going on. Have you heard from any other locals or specific unions as to what you're doing over here, organizing legislative aides? Has anybody picked up on this around the country?
Yeah, I've actually, through the course of this campaign, had a few other IBEW locals reach out to us asking about our status and how things were moving along, because they were actually already doing similar work in their states. I don't want to divulge who yet, because I'm not sure how public those campaigns are, but there are other states working on similar efforts.
You know, Tony, we're just running out of time here, so maybe we'll pick that up in another conversation. But I have to salute you what you're doing. This is interesting. I've had a lot of IBEW locals on the show, but not one like yours. Yours is a little bit different. You're a professional and an industrial union, very, very diverse, and I think that is unique, and maybe that may be the course for the future. Who knows? Like you said, some other locals are following your suit here. So, gentlemen, I'm going to wrap it up. Any final words here before we go to our next guest?
I'd just like to get out to any worker that's listening. If you all are having problems in your workplace, you're not getting the respect or the voice, your voice being heard, please reach out to any union in your state. If you're in Oregon or Washington, local89.com, reach out to us, and we're happy to help you, whether that's just fight for a voice or to full-on recognition in your workplace. Thanks.
And Logan, I'm going to give you the last word. Go ahead.
Ed, I really appreciate you having us on today. It's been a really it's been a privilege to be able to share the story of the workers here in the legislature with you and your audience. Hopefully we will be able to let you know that this has been a successful campaign in the near future.
Very good. We'll stay on it. IBEW89.com for more information. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to move on. Coming up next, Joyce Goldstein, noted labor attorney, talking about the changes at the National Labor Relations Board.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly and Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget we're available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, Joyce Goldstein of Joyce Goldstein and Associates. Phone number is 216-771-6633. Website is joycegoldsteinlaw.com. And you may recall a conversation I had with Joyce just about a month or two ago talking about the possible changes at the National Labor Board. Well, we didn't think they were going to happen that quick, but boy, did they happen quickly. Hey, Joyce, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's always great to be back. How are you?
So, yeah, I'm doing well here. We've been covering the changes on the labor board, and I'm just, every time I reported on them, I brought up your name. I'm saying, boy, Joyce has got to be really jumping up and down right now, because these changes, we didn't expect them to happen so quick. The changes started with Peter Roblett. Let's start right there. He was the general counsel, right?
Right. Boy, it has been really quite stunning. I went back and I looked at my notes, and in general counsel's term, Peter Robb actually was set to expire November of this year. And when we talked right after the election, I said to you, well, you know, he could be replaced sooner, but no president has ever done that, to take out a general counsel before the expiration of his term, but it could be done. And sure enough, President Biden is amazing, because he, within minutes of taking office on January 20th, he asked for Peter Robb's resignation. And when Robb refused to resign from the NLRB, he fired him. And on the next day, the number two person, who was Robb's selected number two person, she stepped in and became acting general counsel, anointing herself as acting general counsel. And boom, Biden asked for her resignation. She didn't give it, and he fired her too. And then it was the weekend, and by Monday, there was a new sheriff in town. So the speed at which this happened was really remarkable. Remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you said. The number two person anointed herself. That didn't last very long, though. Oh, my gosh. So let's talk about the new guy. The new guy is Peter Orr. Maybe you could explain how he came into the fold.
Sure. So Peter Orr, so he was appointed by President Biden as acting general counsel. He's not there for the long haul, but, it's, I guess, to be determined for how long he stays in that position. He became the acting general counsel on Monday, the 25th of January. And he had been the regional director for the NLRB out of the Chicago office. And what he was most known for in labor law circles is he was the regional director who said that the college football players at Northwestern University had the right to unionize because they should be considered employees under the National Labor Relations Act. You recall that a few years ago. And that was a big deal because it was a big deal for workers. It was a big deal for sports fans. The whole controversy with the NCAA and, you know, student athletes, and are they really employees or not, and how should they be treated? And Peter Orr jumped right into that as when he was regional director and said, yes, that the student athletes in this situation at Northwestern were really employees who deserve the protection of the federal labor laws. Unfortunately, the NLRB at that time chose to defer the issue. It was so controversial, and the law actually has since not been clarified on it, and those football players were left out to dry, and, you know, then all graduated. But that's Peter Orr. So for labor lawyers, we that's how we think of him. He's the football player, regional director, who really stepped in and was very courageous in that situation. So now he's the new acting general counsel, and boy, he has come with that same energy and commitment that he showed to all of those in Chicago. It's exciting.
Well, the first thing that he ruled on is the neutrality case, and apparently he withdrew that case. Why don't you explain what that was all about and the impact that's going to have on workers?
Yes, well, again, this is another matter that you and I had talked about not that long ago. I think it was on our December show. We talked about how Peter Robb, the former general counsel, it's great to be able to say the former general counsel, Peter Robb had filed a case accusing a Seattle hotel of providing illegal aid to a union in an organizing campaign by agreeing to neutrality. Peter Robb wanted to make new law. It wasn't the case. It's never been the case in the law, but he wanted to reverse existing law and say that it was an unfair labor practice for an employer to let union organizers onto their property to talk with workers or provide them with workers' contact information. And Rob had been trying to use that case to go to the full NLRB to change the law to make it harder for workers to organize and for unions to have access to them. And what Peter Orr did as soon as he came into office was that he withdrew the complaint in that case. So he killed that case. And related to that, he also withdrew what was a guidance memorandum that had gone out more broadly through the agency about how to handle neutrality cases, because he was clearly looking for these kind of cases to bring so that he could limit the law. And so in a really dramatic sort of two-step motion, he had the case dismissed by withdrawing the complaint in the Seattle situation, and also withdrew the guidance memorandum that was related to that.
This is huge. Big changes in a very short amount of time. Now, you indicated he's only temporary then. There's going to be a permanent one. Well, what will that mean for his future? Will he still stay in the organization or what?
I guess that's hard to know. We'll see. It's really, you know, I don't know what the timing will be of when President Biden will nominate someone. I'm sure given what he did, President Biden on this, I'm sure that whoever he nominates for the full position as not just the acting will be terrific. I'm sure we'll be very happy with whoever that is, given the selection and hear of Peter Orr and how he so summarily got rid of Peter Robb. I mean, the thing is that whenever it does happen, I'm sure it'll be fine. But in the meanwhile, Peter Orr has gone to work, because not only did he deal with the neutrality case that we just talked about, but he withdrew a dozen guidance memos, internal memos in the within the agency about how to handle particular cases.
Yeah, Joyce, one of them is involving the NLRB employees themselves. Apparently, if they wanted to do a speaking engagement, can you speak to that memo with the Peter Orr?
Yeah, apparently before anybody, any agency employee was going to go out and talk, like maybe, you know, an NLRB lawyer, we have them all the time speaking at labor law conferences and that sort of thing. And anyone who working for the agency had to get pre-approval from the general counsel's office before accepting any speaking engagements. And presumably that could be for no other reason than to regulate their speech. So that was one of the memos that he rescinded.
What about the free rider issues?
Yeah. So he rescinded a memo on that had to do with union security clauses, you know, the, as you say, free riders, people who get the benefit of a union contract without paying. He withdrew some of the guidance that Rob had put out about how those cases should be handled, you know, the kinds of things that make it easier for people to quit unions, quit paying their dues, and that sort of thing, that there have been issues of around whether if an employee was going to quit the union, they had to send a letter by certified mail or not. Rob said that a union should make it absolutely as easy as possible for anybody to quit a union and stop paying dues whenever they want. And that was how he was directing the law. And so some of those issues have now been put back to what had been existing law for a long time.
All right. One more issue here, and that's Lauren McFerrin. And she apparently replaced John Ring as board chair. Any significance to that move, Joyce?
Oh, sure. Yes, absolutely. So Lauren McFerrin had only been on the NLRB as a board member since this past July that the Senate confirmed her. She, before that, was a member of the board from December of 2014 to December of 2019. So she served a term on the board as a Democrat, and her term expired, and the Trump administration did not agreed to replace her with her or with anybody else for quite some time. And so that's recalled the time period where we had just a three-member NLRB, all Republicans. And you and I talked about that in real time at that time. Well, then there was a deal when one of those Republicans' terms was going to expire. The Senate made a deal and the administration where they reappointed one of those Republicans and they brought her back as the fourth member and the sole Democrat. Now what happened was that President Biden made her the sole Democrat, now the chair of the board of the NLRB, and replaced John Ring, who had been the board chair, who was a staunch corporate lawyer for his career before being on the board. And so he was definitely no friend of workers or unions. And he's been the board chair under Trump most recently, and now is no longer under President Biden. So Lauren McFerrin is now the new board chair. And so that's great. And so we still have one more vacancy to fill, which is a Democratic seat, as soon as the Biden administration nominates someone for that. And then we'll be able to actually change the overall composition of the board when the next vacancy comes, which will be in August of 2021.
Get the union busters out of there. All right. Make it sensible for workers for once. I'll tell you. Lightning speed changes on the National Labor Relations Board. Joyce, thank you so much. You put it all together for us. Joyce Goldstein and Associates, JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com. Founded in 1986. Long time there. Joyce's vast experience in labor and employment law, employee benefits, as well as litigation. And of course, she is our commentator on labor law here on America's Workforce. Well, you take care, be safe, stay warm, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees, and we talk about the people who take care of our national parks. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.